Good morning and welcome to episode 2 of our monthly Meet the Experts Q&A sessions with Sinton's Wills Trust and Estates team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sinton's. As I mentioned last time in episode 1, this series has come about due to the success of the other monthly live Q&A sessions we're running across the firm with our employment and family teams, and also just due to the amount of questions we receive relating to wills, trusts and estates on a daily basis. So we thought these sessions would assist with many of those questions, and we'll continue to bring them live to you at 10 a.m. on the second working Friday of each month via Teams. Our speaker today is Associate Lauren Fraser, and as I move the slides across, you can see Lauren's face there and details, and also the questions that Lauren's going to move across to in a second. So three questions today. She's going to start with question 1 of 3. So without any further ado, Lauren, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David, and good morning, everyone. So I'll just jump into the first question we've got there, which is, I have been as appointed as an executor of my relative's will, but I don't want to act. What are my options? So here we're talking about a situation where if a relative of yours has passed away, you found out under the terms of will you are an executor, but due to maybe time pressures or other commitments, you don't want to act as the executor. What can you do? And the first thing to say is that whenever a person makes a will, although it's advisable for them to let the executors know or maybe ask their permission, it's not a requirement. So unfortunately, this situation does arise from time to time where people kind of unexpectedly find out that they are executors of a will. There are things you can do if you really don't want to act. The first of those is you can renounce as executor. So that is essentially you saying, I want nothing to do with the estate for whatever reason, I don't want to accept this appointment. And you can sign a deed of renunciation, essentially saying that you're going to have no further involvement in that. That's something that ideally you make that decision sooner rather than later, soon as possible, because if you do take any steps whatsoever to start to get involved in the estate, that option doesn't become available anymore. So it's really important, if you do just want to completely renounce the executor, essentially, as I said, just take a complete step back, that you do it as soon as possible. The second option is you can act with power reserved. And what that means is, if there are a number of executors appointed in the will, of which you are one, you can act with power reserve, which essentially means that the other executors will continue on with the estate. So they will take an active role, collecting the assets, distribute to the beneficiaries, and do everything as per the terms of the will. If you're acting with power reserve, you very much kind of sit in the background of things. So you don't completely give up the right to act as an executor, but you're not essentially taking on a proactive role. And what that means is, if, for example, anything were to happen to the active executors, perhaps they die themselves, or there's an issue later on, you can then step up and act as executor if that becomes appropriate. So that, as I said, you kind of sit in the background and you don't completely give up the right to act as executor. These options will very much depend on who else is appointed. So whether you're appointed along with other family members or friends or professionals, as to which one you think is most appropriate. The other option is you can say, well, actually, what I'd like to do is, the deceased relative has appointed me as an executor, perhaps for a reason, because they trust you or they think you're good with money and finances. So actually, I would like to take up my role, but I simply just don't have the time or the expertise to do it. And in that case, what you can do is then look to instruct a professional to help with the administration of the estate. So you can ask a solicitor to basically take on the role of drafting legal documentation to advise you on the process of administering the estate. And you can kind of pass over as much of the work as possible to the solicitors. But ultimately, at the end of the day, as executor, you will still sign all the documentation and your name will be on the grant of probate. And you will have the responsibilities and role of an executor. With that, you can deduct any legal charges from the estate as a testamentary expense. So you're not going to be paying yourself for that legal advice. They can be deducted from the estate. And that is quite a popular option, especially, as I said, because people do feel if they are an executor of will that they kind of want to respect the deceased person's wishes and take up that role. So just moving on to the second question, which is, I have got an advanced decision in place. Do I still need to make a lasting power of attorney? Okay, so an advanced decision is a document whereby a person over 18 with capacity can specify certain specific medical treatment which they would like to refuse to continue. Some examples of this may include being artificially fed or hydrated, or if you're being kept on a ventilator and your life is being continued by that treatment. If ultimately you have lost capacity in that situation, then the advanced decision can say to the medical professionals that you don't want those specific treatments to be continued. So you're refusing that medical treatment. An advanced decision is a document whereby you can only refuse treatment to be continued. So you can't demand that the doctors give you certain treatments in any circumstances. But provided that it's complied with certain rules, then it's a legally binding document and the medical professionals do have to respect your wishes in an advanced decision. The downside to an advanced decision is that you do have to list specific treatments that you don't want to be continued. So the wording has to be very specific, which is obviously quite difficult because it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. You just don't know sort of what might happen in the future. So whilst they can be very, very handy documents to have, they also are quite limiting. A lasting power of attorney for health and welfare will allow you to appoint an attorney to make those decisions about your health and well-being. So you can allow your attorneys to make any decisions in your best interests about what medical treatment you receive, where you're looked after, who you're looked after by, and ultimately they can, if you choose to, give or refuse consent to life-sustaining treatment on your behalf. The benefits of a power of attorney are that essentially you don't have to kind of set out specific treatments. You can allow your attorneys to make any decision in your best interests. And so it's often advisable to have a power of attorney so that your attorneys can have, as I said, the ability to make decisions in a wider range of circumstances. You can have both documents in place. You just need to make sure that the two don't conflict with each other. So for example, if you've made a power of attorney and you're later wanting to make an advanced decision, you just have to be careful that you're not refusing treatment that you're allowing your attorneys to continue in the lasting power of attorney. So as I said, those are the kind of difference between the documents. It is advisable to go with the lasting power of attorney for the reasons set out. But as I said, advanced decisions still definitely do have their place. And third and final question. How do we make sure that if we die whilst our children are still young, that they will be looked after financially? So I think with this one, the key distinction for people when they've got really young children that they're making a will is the difference between the guardians and the trustees of any monies that they're leaving for children. So when you're making a will and you're looking at the appointment of guardians, those are the people that would be responsible for making decisions around the upbringing of the children. They will have parental responsibility as if they were the parents of the children. And here we're talking about if both parents have died before they reach 18. The guardians will make decisions such as where the children live, where they go to school, who looks after them, all those sorts of things. As I said, what any parent will be able to decide for their children. A trustee is slightly different. So if you're leaving your estates perhaps for each other when you've died, and then when you've both died down to children, the trustees will be responsible for looking after the money for the children. Very often they're the same people. So if you're thinking about if you as parents of your children have both died, who's going to look after the children and who's going to look after the money? Very often it's family members, so you might have their aunts and uncles or your own parents. And as I said, the guardians and trustees can very much be the same people. Sometimes clients choose different people for different roles, depending on their relationship with the children. Perhaps you have certain family members who are really good with money and finances, but perhaps the children have a better relationship with your parents or other family members. As I said, in terms of looking after the money, that's the job of the trustees. And very often when people are making a will, they're leaving their estates for children until they reach a specific age. So that may be the age of 18, 21, 25, sometimes 30. Sometimes it can be any particular age, but those are the most common ones. And essentially the role of the trustees is to manage that trust fund for your children until they reach the specified age. Now, obviously the concern there is, well, if all the money is tied up for the children until they reach the age of, say, 21, how are the trustees going to look after the children until they reach that age? And the answer is that there are statutory powers available for the trustees to release monies from that trust earlier for to help with the upbringing of the children, to help with their living costs, with school fees, etc. So that this big pot of money that you're leaving them doesn't just have to sit there until they reach 21. It can be used to help look after them before they reach that age, and then whatever is left can simply be passed over to them at the age of 21. The trustees can either pay things directly from the trust fund. So as I said, if it's things like school fees or university fees or help with living costs, with clothing, etc., they can pay for things outright from the trust fund, or they may choose to give it to the guardian, and the guardian can obviously then use it to help look after the children however they think best. Very often in wills, the statutory powers are either kind of clarified or modified. So if you do have a will, or if you're making a will, you might see reference to those powers with regards to income and capital of the trust fund. One of the main concerns for people when they've got young children is where they're going to live and the family home, and whether they're going to stay in the family home or whether they're going to move to the home of the guardians. With that, they may choose either to leave a cash sum to the guardians, so that might allow the guardians to perhaps make improvements to their existing home, maybe add an extension or just develop the home to fit the needs of the family and the additional children they're looking after. Or sometimes wills have powers for the trustees to make a loan to the guardians. So from the trust fund, they may give a cash sum to the guardians, but as a loan to be paid back, and that'll help the guardians to, again, maybe either improve their property or to buy a new house for the new family. So there are kind of a lot of things that can be done to make sure that children are looked after, particularly with regards to the finances. It's not a case simply that if you're leaving your estates to your minor children that the cash is all going to be tied up. As I said, those are the two kind of separate roles, and they may be one of the same person, but certainly for the trustees, they are able to make sure that the trust fund can be used appropriately for your children. But whatever you do, it's definitely worth getting some legal advice on your particular circumstances, just to make sure that your family needs are looked after. So without further ado, I think that comes to the end of our questions for today. So I'll hand you back to David. Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Enjoyed listening to that. Just so you are aware, we continue to work hard to produce and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, blogs, podcasts, and videos, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all episodes of these Q&A sessions. And if you'd like to follow the team on Twitter, that's at SintonsPC. Just moving the slide there back on to Lauren's details. If you'd like to discuss anything Lauren's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. As I said, contact details are there in front of you. Our next session will be with you Friday, the 16th of September at 10 a.m. And as usual, I will send the link round nearer the time. Just wanted to thank you for the amount of people that have, well, have tuned in today, but also tuned in to our last session and also watched the recording on our website afterwards. We've hit just short of 10,000 people. So we generally are staggered with that interaction. And we are so glad that these sessions are adding value to you. So appreciate that. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time. Thank you.